good to be with all of you today. I hope you're doing all right. Hope you had a nice weekend. I myself had a troubling experience over the weekend. It was, you know, I'm not complaining, but I thought it was worth sharing with you because I think it helps provide some much needed perspective on what's important in our politics. You know, I've always found this phenomenon of the so-called single issue voter kind of silly. You know what I mean? Even if it is understandable, you know. While it is, of course, understandable in the extreme that people care deeply for some things more than others and can hardly be expected to understand all the intricacies of the government's many tentacles, I have long held in contempt those who are so blinded by this or that pet project that they come to embody this cliche of missing the forest for the trees. The libertarians, as they do in so many contexts, provide a helpful warning poster here. The libertarian project is vast in its scope, but narrow in its perceptions. You could hardly describe them as single-issue voters, since they want to completely reorder society, but they aim to do so along this spectrum of more or less government, without much concern for all that that entails. Since the world is decidedly more complex than this, their ideas cease to correspond with reality, and eventually you come to see from them the grotesque things we become accustomed to seeing. I'm not even sure, like, it warrants mentioning any more egalitarianism. It's just fake at this point. But, you know, we'll give it a drive-by. Their seething anti-white racial animus parading as a desire to help the downtrodden had a surprisingly long run, I might say. But there are no longer any true believers in the inherent equality of man, if any ever did exist. There are those that oppose this fraud and those who coercively demand that people assent to their lies and operate as if they were true, even knowing that they are not. There is no longer any effort to convince people. It is purely coercive and unapologetically so. But whatever the reality, this dimension of our politics wherein the government is good or bad to the extent that all of its citizens own the same amount and quality of stuff, well, with lunacy like that pervasive for so long, it is hardly any wonder that libertarianism briefly looked respectable to some. One of the things I've really liked seeing in recent years is outraged parents. Not that I'm glad that they're unhappy. Surely I would prefer that they were happy and right to be so. I should hope that that would go without saying. But since a parent would have to be terribly uninformed to be content with what's going on in the world these days, their outrage is preferable to their acquiescence. These people are not ideologues with notable exceptions. Among them, there is no consensus on the appropriate level or method of taxation. The demographic patterns are tough to miss, but it's not fundamentally ethnocentric. Many of them couldn't tell you what it means to be right-wing or left-wing, much less would they care to be so categorized. They have a rather simple, if expansive, demand. They want what is best for their kids. And truth be told, most of them have not the vaguest idea what that is, but when they see people doing things that are obviously intended to harm their children, the outrage is immediate and widespread, and not at all subject to containment. Ideologues see this, and they're like, oh, heck yeah, discontented people. I can go try to infect them with my mind virus. And this does not work out well for them, does it? Whether it's leftists telling them they need more diversity, or libertarians telling them they need less government, or nationalists blaming the Jews, the parents quite appropriately say, get away from me, weirdo. I just want these lunatics to leave my child alone. And from this experience, I have learned not to trust ideologues. If you want a measurement of good government, it would be making those people happy without lying to them. The government that does that will last 1,000 years, and all of its errors will be forgiven quite promptly. If you have ideological goals and you want to accomplish them, this is not to say that you cannot do so. You just have to fit it into that little framework. But ideologues have trouble accomplishing this because their motives are at odds with those of the people whose support they require to enact them. They're so stuck in their own heads and social circles that they lose track of what normal people want. They speak in jargon and associate with like minds and treat non-ideologues as suspects. They are, simply put, part of the problem these parents have identified with society, even when it is their rival ideological sects causing the problem at the center of a given moment's outrage. Few things have outraged parents more, or more rightly, than the atrocities carried out in the name of COVID-19. I remember watching this masking lunacy on TV from jail and then from prison and joking with guys inside that the people outside the walls had it worse than us. And later on, I came to realize that might not be such a funny joke after all. Among the things that upset me the most about this was when it was pointed out that children who were supposed to be learning to speak during that time were not able to see faces on account of the masking. And since children learn to speak in significant part by watching other people's lips move when they talk, they would, as a consequence of this, have their speech development impeded. As a guy who understands and appreciates the importance of speech perhaps more than most, this really, really upset me. When I first had that idea put into my head, I instantly recognized that this was obviously a disaster, and that anyone who called themselves a public health official would have to understand the obviousness and gravity of this. The longer it went on, and the more times I heard about it, the more angry I got, because after a certain period of time, you can no longer maintain the illusion that this is an unfortunate side effect of misguided ideas or mere overprotectiveness or even paranoia. Eventually, it becomes obvious that they understood full well that what they were doing was harming the children, and they knew that there was no benefit to offset that cost outside of their own political machinations. But they don't view harming children as red on the ledger. They view this as a positive thing, because damaged people are their constituency, and they aim to make as many of them as they possibly can by whatever means they might opportunistically find at their disposal. Now, I don't spend a lot of time talking to four-year-olds, sadly. But there is one I come into contact with on a semi-regular basis since I got out of prison, and he's a really sweet kid. He was just a baby when I went away, so he didn't know me at all when our regular interactions began, and these have been roughly weekly. Time goes forward, and he's a little bit more familiar with me as of late, and over the weekend I'm at the grocery store with him and his mother. Typically, when we do this, we split up. I go do my thing, they go do theirs, we meet outside. This time he says, I want to go with Chris. And he's kind of insistent upon this. And I'll tell you, I was honored by the sheer gravitas of his assertiveness. I have a bad habit, you might say, of internalizing way too much of the negative things that people say about me, and this is in some measure due to my having much to be ashamed of, not pertaining to what those people say. I tend to think of near all of what I say and do as decidedly age-prohibitive, and even when I do attempt to contain my use of profanity, I struggle to summon the restraint required to produce anything that could consistently be described as family-friendly. I didn't spend much time in the company of children before I went to prison. I consider it one of the very few things our government does right that I did not see any while I was there. Subsequent to my release, I live in a place hardly safe for adults, and what little thinking I do about kids is near always in relation to my desiring of a wife. The idea that some kid wanted to hang out with me came as quite unexpected, and I was, in a word, touched by this. Now, when he's talking to his mother and father, they understand each other just fine for the most part. But this whole time, I've managed to understand maybe like 80% of what this kid has been saying. I do not, off the top of my head, know at this time what the normal development timeline of a child's speech is, and since I know his parents are smart and they love him and they care for him and everything else about the boy seems fine, I've been operating under the assumption that he probably talks better than most four-year-olds and will work this out on what will be comparative to other kids his age, an accelerated timeline. But when we're alone in the store, I try to bond with the boy a bit, and I'm unsure of myself because this is the most in-depth conversation I've had with a child in a very long time. What's your favorite dinner that mom makes? What games do you like to play? This type of thing. And I'm not understanding his responses. And, you know, in my mind, I'm not doing this boy any favors by saying, yeah, go ahead, keep babbling, kid, and I'll just keep on nodding like I understand. No, I can't do that. You know, it's actually pretty important that I really do understand. That's the only way that we can have a conversation. And since you just made my day by reminding me that I'm not the monster that people read about in the newspapers, this matters to me an awful lot. So I says to him, I'm like, look, I understand words 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 8. I need you to help fill in the blanks here. Like, let's go repeat those words that I didn't understand so I understand your sentence. But instead, he rephrases the entire sentence, and in his rephrasing, I miss other words, and things do not come into better focus. And this is very frustrating for me. And at first, I try to bring his focus back to the words I missed in the original sentence. But I'm also starting to doubt myself here, so I try not to push the boy too hard. And it takes a little bit, but I start to realize, you know, this child's actually putting some significant effort into trying to communicate with me. He understands that I don't understand, and he's trying to find entirely new words to illuminate the situation. It's not that he doesn't have the words. In fact, he's got words to spare. You don't understand those words? Here's some other words. How about these? It's not that he doesn't understand the rules of conversation. He's actually operating at a higher level than I might have expected by finding entirely different ways to explain the concept under discussion. So I realize I'm the one who's failing to grasp the situation here and not the four-year-old, so I stop trying to push the boy. And so we wrap it up, we get in a car, and I ask his mother about the expected development timeline of a child's speech. And I know before I ask her this question that she understands concepts like IQ entirely too well. So I'm certain that she has a precise answer for this. She also understands that on a practical level, I missed the whole COVID-19 phenomenon. I was in prison the whole time. And there's been a few times since then that she's had to explain to me this brave new world of ours. And so in that vein, she begins to explain the importance of seeing people's lips move when you're learning to speak. And before she could even get started, it made perfect sense to me. He has no shortage of words. He understands everything. He's having trouble with pronunciation. And being aware of this trouble, he keeps on trying to find new words. And this was the first time I had ever actually witnessed this thing that I was just dreading from prison. I was like, you do this to an entire generation of kids, what's going to happen, you know? I was dreading this, and this was the first time I had seen it up close and personal. It's with this kid who might as well have placed a crown on my head half an hour ago. And, you know, that could be a dangerous combination, right? When a political issue you take, that you're very passionate about, it hits home in a very personal way. The feeling that came over me when I realized this was profoundly negative, you might safely say, a troubling and increasingly familiar combination of anger and despair that could leave a man liable to do something he might regret from a jail cell. Or perhaps worse than this, from that very jail cell, have no regrets at all. I wanted to find one of these people who had harmed this child, and I want to make sure that they understood entirely the gravity of their crime. You know, and you try to work through the implications of that, you know what I mean? How does one, with no more than two hands at his disposal, inform someone who has intentionally inflicted upon an entire generation of innocent children speech impediments and psychological trauma and delays in education and development, whose consequences are, in plain English, immeasurable, will be unfolding for decades and will, in all likelihood, be transmitted in some measure to future generations? What can my two hands do to deliver a message of that weight? You know, there might be some trial and error involved in such a thing. I don't imagine I'd get it right the first time. I might have to find a few of these folks. See what works. And ideas like this, as much as anything else, make me question my own fitness to be around children sometimes, certain though I may be of my fury's righteousness. It was nice for a minute there to think of myself as harmless, you know? For the briefest of moments, I felt like a kid myself. You know, yeah, let's go play, kid. I forgot all about the groceries. It was pretty nice. But these days, we're never far from a reminder that men must be dangerous, are we, fellas? And, you know, the people who did this, they mean to do it again. And again, and again. And then they'll find something worse to do after that, you know? They do not question at all their fitness to be around children, do they? You see them floating this lunacy, seeing what they can get away with, probing the tolerance levels of the population. They find their limits, retreat just a little, then charge forward again and again and again, each time gaining some ground, sometimes a little, sometimes a lot, but they never stop because they understand as well as I do that there is little indeed that my two hands can do to stop them. Our interactions for today did conclude with a bit of levity, I'm happy to report. It was a decidedly mixed sort of levity, but that might be the best that we can hope for nowadays. The boy, he asks a lot of questions, as I understand kids his age have been known to do. Though I gather he's more curious than others, you know, a smart kid anxious to understand the world which he is to inherit. He asks a question about the cracks in the roads, and I decide maybe I'll have a little fun with this. And I say, oh, you know, the Democrats, they don't take good care of the roads in our city. In other cities, they have nicer roads. Well, he corrects me by pointing out that actually, it's the plants under the pavement that are pushing up the roads and causing them to crack. And of course, both of us have a point here. So I'm like, well, yeah, you know, that's true, kid. You know, the plants, they push up the concrete, but then the Democrats, they don't fix the roads and the sidewalks like they're supposed to. And he tells me, Jesus will fix it. And I says to him, might just come to that, kid. Now, I want you to think about something with that in mind, you know. Whatever your thoughts may be on Jesus, I have been long told that God helps those who help themselves. And I don't consider it any coincidence that those most certain of God's justice tend to be those who try really hard to do the right thing. People who wait around for God to fix things, I have observed, find themselves unsatisfied, and whatever they profess their faith to be, demonstrate through their acts that they do not believe they are being judged by an all-knowing deity. There was a time in my life, a pretty long time actually, where I thought my ideas were just so important that they must be implemented at any cost. I had an endless array of justifications for this, and I'd say most actually had merit, still do. One can observe, plain as day, things continuing on as they are is not an option because this unsustainable chaos and evil is in itself costly. So a reasonable man may accept some expense if it means a better course for the future. But imagine a lot of you had a lot more interactions with children in the last 4 years than I have. You know better than me what damage has been inflicted upon them. I should certainly hope that this steady exposure has left you better adjusted than I. But I do not imagine that my outrage is at all lost on you. When I think about people who say, it doesn't matter who the next president is or what party's in control of the government or all these politicians are the same, I'm not sure I can continue maintaining the idea in my own head that these people are any less responsible for what happened to that child than Anthony Fauci is. People who have the capacity to mitigate, even slightly, that damage and simply decline to do so because they think they'll get more of what they want after things get worse? Well, just say it's a good thing one of them wasn't within arm's reach of me when I realized what had been done to this kid.